ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
You know, every morning, every Sunday, every week, I'm excited to get on here to the ESPN College Football Podcast and break down the Saturday that was with the great Paul Feinbaum. But I had no idea, Paul, that we'd be coming on this thing October 10th after the Saturday that we saw. Out of all the stuff that was going to go on, the last thing that I thought we'd be talking about was Alabama getting beat at Texas A&M and completely throwing the college football planet on its axis. What an absolute crazy, crazy day of college football.
Yeah, and Matt, what if I had told you at 4 o'clock yesterday that the game we had just witnessed in Dallas between Oklahoma and Texas would not be the best game in Texas that day? I mean, what happened last night, or whenever you're listening to this, I guess early Sunday morning in some parts of the country, has to be considered beyond shocking, because it was a game that we talked about here a week ago that had been circled as the game of the year in the SEC. And then we just threw it away like trash. Like, this game does not matter. Like, going to Kyle Field doesn't make any difference. And were we ever wrong? And what all the issues that we saw with Alabama a couple weeks ago at the Swamp came right back up and bit them. And Matt, when we look at the rankings right now, and Alabama is not a lead pipe cinch to make the playoffs, then we know we've had an amazing first half of the season. We're not even completely at the halfway point yet.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the part of the Alabama A&M assignment, because yesterday we're sitting there in the studio, Sam Acho, Joey Galloway, and myself, and we're talking about why is the Alabama – because, you know, Sam Acho, new to TV, trying to explain to him the ins and outs of what goes on. And he goes, well, why is Alabama Texas A&M – the primetime game? And I give him the cliff notes on, okay, you know, networks have an opportunity to choose so many games, so many primetime windows, yada, yada, yada. I won't bore you with the details. But I say, I find it funny that CBS gambled on A&M Alabama at the beginning of the year. Now they're going to get an absolute blowout. And this is at like 2:30 in the afternoon. And so I'm thinking CBS wasted it. They don't have a good primetime game. And now they have not only the game of the year, it's going to be the highest rated game of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And congratulations to the CBS folks, because that was not setting up to be a good game. There are so many layers of this thing that I want to unpack. The first one is from the get-go, Paul, from the absolute start of the game, it was clear A&M was there to punch Alabama in the mouth and take every shot that they had.
They were, and they had a couple of friends helping them out, and they were dressed in Alabama coaching uniforms. The performance by Bill O'Brien and Pete Golding would have to be considered one of the most embarrassing I've ever seen of Nick Saban coordinators. Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator, came under fire a couple of weeks ago. Then he put a really good game plan together against Ole Miss, and you know, it was just really abominable what I saw. And Bill O'Brien surprised me. Now, the fact that Bill O'Brien's losing a game in the state of Texas shouldn't be a big deal, shouldn't be a big surprise.
And that close to Houston, too.
Exactly. But I think Alabama, Matt had it on the 3-yard line and had 3 straight passing plays. I mean, even former players, Devontae Smith was tweeting, run the damn ball.
Mark Ingram played last year.
Yeah. I mean, but Devontae played last year. I mean, Ingram played a decade ago. And I mean, that just shows you never see that with Alabama players. And I wanted to believe that O'Brien, you know, had the right cards. And listen, you can't fault him entirely, because, you know, they did score a lot of points and they came back from a hole. But I mean, what one series to me just was emblematic of Alabama. They block a punt for a touchdown and are about to crawl back in the game, and then they give up a kickoff return. And I know what happened after that, but at some point, Matt, the emotion is just, it's like watching Tyson Fury and Wilder last night. I mean, at some point you just give out, and Alabama defensively at the end was gone, and it was really amazing to watch.
You brought up two things. One, anyone watching that game, all of us who love the sport of college football and cover it for a living, you know, you were sitting there waiting. I was waiting for Alabama. Everybody was waiting for Alabama. It's like, okay, this is a cute story. It's a great story. It's keeping everybody watching the game. This is really, really fun, but it's only a matter of time before Alabama goes Alabama and starts waking up. And it started to happen. The block punt, I was convinced the block punt is when it was going to start. And for me, that's when I had an idea that maybe that night was going to be different. Because, Paul, Alabama never makes those mistakes. They never let a team get back into a game with an ensuing kickoff return. That was the moment when you were like, oh my gosh, there's a chance that this happens. And there were so many things that were uncharacteristic of Alabama. That offensive line last night, Saturday night, got pushed around by A&M's defensive front. And I want to know, like, where did Zach Calzada come from? It was one of the gutsiest performances I've ever seen. A&M, and this is being polite, A&M has been inept on offense for the last month since Calzada took over. And Saturday night, it was one of the bravest, gutsiest performances I've ever seen. And this raises so many questions now on what we're going to be dealing with now for the next 6-7 weeks.
One thing I will have to deal with, because I do a talk show every day, is when I look down and see somebody wanting to talk about Alabama, Georgia, they're gone. I'm not talking about that game right now, because until now, Matt, that's we were starting to center on that in the SEC, and now there are just too many other tangibles, or intangibles, I should say. But Alabama is not done. And I heard somebody text me today and say, hey, before you go off on Alabama, remember something, and I know you're going to love this, Matt. Alabama controls its own destiny.
Of course.
In what? If Alabama wins out, they'll win the national championship. But let's not worry about that right now, because this does not look like an Alabama team that we were trying to make them out to be. Well, I was trying to make them out to be a week ago.
Look, we were all guilty of saying, okay, the top two teams have separated themselves. It's Alabama, Georgia, and everyone else. If you go back into the library of the ESPN College Football Podcast, which I encourage everyone to do if you don't listen to it on a weekly basis, there was a point in time where Paul and I discussed it, Herbie and I discussed it. We were just talking about, you know, Paul, some of these upsets, they've been brewing. It's symptomatic of team X, Y, and Z playing this way. Clemson was one that we ID'd as a team that, you know what, just watch them. They're going to get got. Oklahoma was a team that were like, oh, they're playing sloppy. They're going to get got. Alabama, the morning after Florida, we're saying, okay, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's hope that we have a little bit of parity and Alabama gets knocked off its perch. And then the Ole Miss game happens. And they're like, well, hell, there goes that theory that Alabama is gettable. And then in a matter of a week, we have a situation where this was supposed to be an all-time defense. People were telling me this is the best defense in the Saban era. People were telling me Bryce Young should win. It's too fresh to sit here and think, what happened to a team that looked as if it had no holes?
Well, with a lot of things, whether it's music or art, we tend to look at the brand and think, well, hey, Apple just put out a product. That means it has to be better than everyone else. And I think with Alabama, I was told that, Matt, you were told that people, it wasn't just like fans. These were people that went to practice in the spring, who know the coaches. They were saying this is the best Alabama defense ever. And after Florida, it was hard to believe, but yeah, Ole Miss helped us believe that. But they're not. And they're not going to be. And you said it. I don't talk fundamentals because that's not my specialty. But the line of scrimmage, Alabama offensively and even defensively wasn't quite to the degree that they have some real issues. And somebody also suggested to me, and this is more of a big macro picture situation, that NIL may be creeping into Alabama a little bit.
Okay.
Meaning a lot of players are doing really well down there. It's not just Bryce Young with the seven figures. I mean, Alabama folks are making money, and it may be frustrating Saban, and he may not be connecting like he has in the past. Now, that's Oliver Stone, pie-in-the-sky theory, but you have to keep track of some of this stuff. And I think there's also the thing about the Alabama-Florida and the Alabama-A&M game. Before the season, any person that covers college football could have said, those are Alabama's two toughest games. But what happened, Matt? The week before both games, no buzz, no real interest that Alabama had any chance of losing. With Florida, it was just because Alabama had them outmanned. With A&M, it was because A&M had lost to Arkansas and Mississippi State the week before. We just said, forget
Done.
It. These are not at best, going into the weekend, Matt, I mean, I do SEC Nation, which tries to go to the premier game, not always, but we looked at the chart. It was about the fifth best game in the league yesterday, going in a week ago, in terms of
based on what we've seen. Of it,
yeah, in terms of what could happen. And it has literally turned the college football world upside down. And Dabo Sweeney is saying, thank you, Nick Saban.
Okay, so to break down A&M for a second, Haynes King was anointed the starter for Jimbo Fisher. He was a highly rated prospect. You're thinking, okay, if Jimbo is hand-selecting this young man, he must be the guy. Well, then he gets hurt. They hand the ball to Zach Calzada, and it's just been one disaster after another for that offense. They barely escaped Colorado, 10-7. Right. Colorado is a bad football team. They got beat by Minnesota 30-0. So you can connect all your dots, this, that, and the other. It was bad. And you're thinking, oh my gosh. And then the Arkansas game happens. They look inept in that one. And then you just mentioned Mississippi State happens. And so I think Alabama goes into that one. I think it was a 19-point favorite.
Yes.
19-point favorite. I think it's the largest upset in Saban's career. And it wasn't on anybody's radar. It didn't. And to your point about the SEC Nation selection, I wouldn't have even looked at it. I would have laughed at the notion. Like, I know people are trying to build this up beginning of the year. Jimbo Fisher mouths off about kicking Alabama's ass while Saban. I get it. Great offseason chatter. There was no way to think that that was going to happen. And you bring up a point that I brought up on television yesterday. I don't remember on one of the 12 shows we were doing, but I said that Alabama has now lost its house money, because before, what was the conversation? You said it. Alabama, Georgia, SEC championship. If they're both undefeated, the loser still gets in because it's, well, guess what? That's gone. Alabama can't lose again. It's done. Their house money is gone.
That is true. And, you know, I heard Nick Saban after the game, as you did, you know, he said something like, I hope our guys remember how this feels.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, what? What? I mean, that's like, is that, am I watching Remember the Titans? I mean, you're the greatest coach of all time. You don't say that. That's what a coach says at the end of the year one, when you lose the rivalry game on the final play and you tell your team, next year when we beat those guys, you're going to remember that feeling. You don't say that as a dynasty is, you know, lifting off. But I just think with Nick Saban, Matt, we rightfully give him all the respect, but we give him too much credit. And, you know, he can only do what he can do. And Jimbo Fisher was a wounded bear. I was on a radio show the other day, Matt. I won't call the station out. And the host of the show asked me, with a straight face, do I think Jimbo Fisher could get fired this year? And I'm like thinking, the guy just signed an extension that's worth $90 million. And by the way, it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Do I think he can be fired? No, I don't. But that's the way we view things. But there is one exception this morning, and I'm guilty of it. We blame everyone for an Alabama loss but the head coach.
And he's earned it. He's earned it, but he's got to look at it now. And he's got you.
Yeah, he does.
You can't say, oh, it was because of this. You got to blame the head coach. I thought Jamie Erdahl did a fantastic job asking him at halftime, why didn't you call any timeouts? And it caught him off guard. He didn't think he'd be questioned about his timeout use before the half. And I thought you did a great job at asking that question, because I think any of us watching the game were thinking, well, why aren't they trying to bang a timeout and get a little bit done before the half? You brought up something a minute ago that I want to circle back to, because it has been flirted with NIL, DJ Uiagalelei, Spencer Rattler, some of the faces of the Sam Howell, some of these guys that were the face, Kayvon Thibodeau, the guys that we associated with big time NIL just hadn't lived up to what we thought they would. I thought Alabama was above that. I thought Alabama was above some of the NIL distraction. I don't think either of us could sit here and say, well, that's it or that's going on. But I think overall, Paul, if we're going to point at a couple of programs where we think there's been that distraction, I don't think Alabama's above getting pointed at for that. I just don't.
No. And Matt, I mean, there's no way that we can relate to this, but if you're 19 or 20 years old and suddenly you've got serious money in your pocket, you start viewing things a little bit differently. And yeah, maybe practice isn't as important. I don't know these things because I think we just typically look past the sign. The signs were there.
I mean,
after Florida, that was like you think you're having a heart attack and you rush yourself to the ER and you find out you've got indigestion, but you're alert but Ole Miss put us to sleep, and Ole Miss is a really, really exciting team, but it shouldn't have been a surprise that Alabama stomped them down. But every week now will be interesting, and we'll go back to giving Saban the credit he deserves. But is there another game they could lose? Yes. If they play like last night, there are plenty of games they can lose. And because Texas A&M wasn't even a really good team.
No.
They have a couple of good teams on the schedule.
So, but what is it? Someone was asking me this, but what does this mean? I don't know. I don't know, because it's October 10th and it's all gone to hell in terms of what Penn State lost, BYU lost, Alabama lost. All these undefeated teams are losing. So, but you're going to sit here and tell me, and it's going to happen. Sure as the sun comes up, it's going to happen. We're recording this at 11:17 a.m. Sunday morning. Iowa is going to be the second ranked team in the country. And I love Iowa and the program that they have. They're not the second best team in the country. That's just where we are right now.
And I think in defense of Alabama, they do deserve credit. As they played their C game, and they nearly won in a very difficult place. And I know that we were lulled to sleep, but we talked about it last week, Matt. Atmosphere matters when you're playing in very hostile environments. And I think you have to say Kyle Field, when Johnny Manziel's leading the cheers late on a Saturday night, is a very hostile place when you're confused and you're not making good decisions. So. They came back. They almost won the game. What will it mean is really now. So, I mean, quickly, if you look at Alabama's schedule, because I know there's a million other things. We could turn this into a 9-hour podcast. But, is there another dangerous game on their schedule? There's nothing quite like this Mississippi State Saturday night coming up. They'll be ready for that. I mean, I'm not really too concerned about Alabama the week after a loss.
No,
they don't lose twice in a row. Tennessee is a very explosive team, but that's not the game that will get them. They have LSU, and that's another whole podcast. The situation with Ed O after losing to Kentucky by double digits. But we're really talking Auburn could give them a couple of problems, but we're really talking about the Georgia game, Matt. That's and the idea. Think about this: if I could break my own rule, Alabama goes to the Georgia game. They're an underdog. They've only been an underdog one other time since 2009. That was against Georgia, and they won that game by about 35 points. If Saban and Alabama lose to Georgia in the championship game, now we've got a conversation.
Yeah, and that was what I was getting at a second ago. Like, all of a sudden, whatever it is, the grammar folks can come at me. Then you're looking at the change of dominance in the SEC, because Kirby Smart and Georgia have been lurking since the national championship game. What was that, 3 years ago with Tua and Devontae Smith as freshmen?
The 17 season.
Yeah, so that Georgia's been lurking. Georgia hasn't capitalized on the talent that Georgia has until now, I don't think. And so Kirby's been recruiting. Kirby's been telling us we're close. I still think Kirby needs a quarterback, but Georgia is right there ready to take over the balance of power, because they've been hanging out and just silently waiting, winning their games and saying this is the year. And every time, like, I came into the season, I'm like, Georgia's loaded. This is the year, but they got to get by Alabama. Now you have an Alabama team. And this isn't to say Georgia couldn't get upset one week, but every game they've been in so far, they went to a hostile environment Saturday in Jordan-Hare, and they put their foot on Bo Nix and Auburn's throat and never even made us think that that game was going to be an upset.
No, Georgia, the number one team in the country by the time you hear this podcast, is playing with a backup quarterback. And yeah, you tell me how many major teams Stetson Bennett could start for. I can't think of any.
Hey, I said yesterday, this is a quarterback room that used to have Jake Fromm, Justin Fields, and Jake Eason. That's a combined 15 stars. And they're trotting Stetson Bennett out there. And they're winning.
And I mean, somebody joked to me last night, do you think Kirby's just saving JT Daniels for the SEC championship game? At this point, he'll need him perhaps against Florida. Florida is a team you could get in a track meet with, but he won't need him too many other times. They have Kentucky this weekend, and I was up there, and that's a really good team.
But, hell of a game.
I'm glad we have it. But ultimately, we'll deal with that later. But it's hard to think about anything other than Alabama, Matt. But that's just the way college football has been for a long time.
There isn't a team that I would be scared of more than Alabama with a week six slap in the face, because you know as well as I do. They will come out. This will be the worst practice of these players' lives. This week is going to be a horrible week for this program internally because of what happened. Saban's going to know who he has in players. He's going to know who has what. Everything's great when you're winning and you're the talk of college football and you're a dynasty and you're an all-time great and you won a national championship. You're going to know immediately. He's going to know immediately who he has as players. That team that won a national championship last year, I know, is an all-SEC schedule. They didn't play in front of anybody. It was empty stadiums. It was quiet. It was not. I mean, there were some fans in there, but it wasn't something that a lot of these players had to contend with last night. You find more out about your team after a loss, and Alabama's probably the last team I would want to rile up after losing a game they had no business losing.
No, but I think in terms of, back to what I said a few minutes ago, I think Saban will sell them on what's in front of them, the task, they are not done, but they're far more vulnerable than I think we really believe they would be, and that's where we are.
Speaking of being vulnerable, Ed Orgeron goes to Lexington. Kentucky was ripe for a letdown, right? They get the win against Florida in Lexington, I think, for the first time since 1986 or 89. That number's escaped me by now. Either way, it was the 80s. And so I'm thinking
86.
86. So I'm thinking, all right, well, here comes LSU. They've got LSU talent. Is Kentucky, have they been partying all week? Are they just not going to be ready for LSU, who's coming off a loss against Auburn? Paul, what happened last night in Lexington, there was a moment where if you'd have switched uniforms, you would have thought Kentucky was LSU and LSU was Kentucky. That's the state of the program.
The problem for Ed Orgeron is the schedule. Going into Saturday night of the next five games, that was possibly the easiest win. Because it's insane now. He has Florida this weekend. He has Ole Miss, Arkansas, Alabama, and then there's Texas A&M at the end. I find it virtually impossible to think that Ed Orgeron will be there at the end of the season.
Yeah, you look at that gauntlet, and I've got it pulled up. I mean, even last week, you go Auburn, Kentucky, Florida ranked, Ole Miss ranked, Alabama ranked, Arkansas ranked, and they just didn't look competitive. I know it was 21-0. They scored to make it 21-7. Everyone's thinking, okay, maybe. But when did that happen? When did that happen to LSU? When did we get to the point where this team in 2019 was unbeatable to the point where they can't go into Lexington and put up a fight?
Well, you said something a minute ago about Kirby Smart. Now, I want to go back 2 years ago. A lot of people were wondering, maybe this LSU under Ed Orgeron is for real. He was recruiting really well, but he made rookie mistakes in personnel. He hired Bo Pelini. He said he didn't even have didn't even interview him. I realize we were in COVID, but come on, that's not how you conduct business. He has two rookie coordinators, and he has a fan base that simply is not going to put up with it. And I think, you know, right now he had to win that game to stop the bleeding. He didn't. He lost. He lost bad. And I don't think there's a path for him. I really don't, Matt. And the 2019 comparisons just don't matter anymore. The program is not ascending. It's descending. Yep. It's crashing and burning. And the LSU fans that I was talking to at my hotel before I went over to the set yesterday, they want him out. They all say the same thing. I love Coach Ogeron, but. And you know what the butt is.
Yeah.
I think they'll find a graceful way because he's a favorite son. They want to be able to bring him back 10, 20, 30 years on the anniversary of the national championship. But they do not want him as a coach anymore.
He wins the 2019 national championship. It was almost a period at the end of his resume. Local guy gone good. An all-timer. But that was the outlier. It is clear looking at LSU in the Ed Orgeron era, pre-national championship, post-national championship, that was a perfect storm of talent and coaching, and it was an outlier. LSU is, in my opinion, the second best job in the SEC. I would put it probably neck and neck. Alabama's one, and I'd put Georgia, LSU, 2A, 2B. You could argue either way. Simply because of the talent that you should get at LSU year in and year out. And he does. But LSU is a program and a school where you should be winning multiple national championships, Alabama-type national championships. You should be the team that every year it comes down to one game, Alabama-LSU for the right to go to the SEC championship. And they're just not there anymore. And I don't know why, and you know this better than anyone, Scott Woodward is not going to be a guy that he's a big fish hunter or big fish, whatever. And he's not going to be patient, and he's not going to just get any other name.
Think about this for a trivia question, Matt. Since 2003, LSU has won three national championships under three different coaches. Maybe somebody else has done that. But that shows what you're talking about here. Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Orgeron. And I'm not saying anybody can win at LSU, but almost anybody can. It's that good of a job. And it's just too bad. I hate it for the guy because he's a lovable character.
He is.
But he's not going to make it. Because I don't think he really has command of the stage. Little things are going to start adding up. He got into an argument with a caller on a radio show the other night. Now, the caller was out of line. That doesn't matter, though. You don't make the kind of responses that he has. The off-the-field issues are building up. And all of a sudden, these things matter. They didn't matter while he was winning. But he's 500 since Joe Burrow left. And he's about to go below 500.
And you know what does matter? Maybe you tweeted this. I don't remember, but I know that this came from you. That on one end, you have schools and administrations and fan bases who jump, 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 jump. I'm going to use what you said a second ago about the Jimbo Fisher radio show. Is he on the hot seat or is he going to get fired? Which is laughable because that's the world we live in. You know who is the complete opposite of that? And I applaud them. Kentucky. They wanted to boot Mark Stoops after year four because he just had nothing going. And then little by little, there was a graphic during the game last night, which is great. They're like building a house, building the foundation, building a program. Sometimes patience is a virtue in college football. Kentucky's proven that that's the case. And so for every job that we look at and be like, man, he's not the right guy. He's got to go. I want to applaud a basketball school in Kentucky for staying with Mark Stoops and letting him build. Now, are they the second best team in the East? They have to be.
Yeah. He's also a humble guy. And the credit goes to Mitch Barnhart, who's a longtime AD there, and Eli Capiluto. There was a moment, I think it was 6 years ago, Matt, that he had to beat Mississippi State. We did our show there that weekend, so I remember it pretty vividly. He was gone. He was done. He had blown a couple of big games. They won on like a 52-yard field goal. And he is built that program from the ground up. He has gone into Ohio. And if Ohio State doesn't want somebody, they raise their hand and say, come on down to Kentucky. It's right across the river. And he's made a living off that. And you know, he made some, you know, very smart decisions in the offseason. And you have to wonder if his quarterback, Will Levis, had been playing for Penn State yesterday, would they have won that game?
I said the exact same thing. I said, because we always do the transfer portal quarterback conversation. There was a time pre-struggles. I don't know what's happened to Jack Cohn at Notre Dame because he did not look good last night until he let him down on the game-winning drive. But we were thinking, did Wisconsin choose the wrong quarterback in Graham Mertz over Jack Cohn? And I had been saying it. Did Penn State choose the wrong quarterback in Sean Clifford or Will Levis? Now, having said that, if Clifford gets hurt and Will Levis is still there, he's the backup comes in. Who knows what happens? But throughout the country now, and it goes into the NIL conversation with the changing landscape of college football, Paul, with the transfer portal and how things are developing across the country, not everybody's got a Caleb Williams hanging out on their bench, which is to say the number one recruit, five-star quarterback coming out of high school that all of a sudden Spencer Rattler struggles and you can just pop in another star. That's not the norm at the rest of these programs. And so you were going to see weeks where starting quarterback goes out, Sean Clifford, backup comes in, and it's a completely different ballgame, and that team's going to get beat.
No, and I know there's not a lot of time left, but, my hat is off to Lincoln Riley, and it's not as hard of a decision as maybe we're trying to make it into, but when you replace the preseason Heisman favorite in the middle of the biggest game of the year and you pull it off, you look really smart.
Should he stay? Do you think Caleb should stay as the starter? Or do you think there was a 1 week, hey, we got out of this, Spencer, get your head together?
Yeah, I might give Spencer one more shot. It worked for Bo Nix 2 weeks ago. But, yeah, I mean, I think Lincoln Riley can figure that one out. But it is still amazing, though. And I mean, if the season ended, Matt, today, we've maybe already had the greatest college football season ever.
Because we haven't even gotten into, I mean, Oklahoma, Texas, you had mentioned that was the biggest comeback in that series history. It was an all-time, it was 28-7, and Jesse Palmer was out yesterday. So we were with Sam Acho. You know, he went to Texas. We're sitting there 28-7. Texas and Sark were doing whatever they wanted. And Acho looks at Joey and I, and he's like, hey, like, I don't like this. With 28-7, I'm not comfortable. I'm like, dude, what is your problem? Oklahoma can't do a thing, and you guys are doing whatever you want. He's like, I just don't like it. We just have to keep our foot on the gas. All gas, no brakes is what Sark says. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, my, here comes Oklahoma. I didn't think that was possible. I think of all the things Lincoln Riley's done, you could put that at probably position number one of the most impressive performance and coaching decision I've seen him make in his time there.
Yeah, I mean, and coming off of last year, which was a classic as well. No, I mean, I think sometimes we just anoint people because they produce great players and Heisman winners. But Lincoln Riley deserves what we are saying about him today. And they're still alive. And that's a remarkable thing. As we do the playoff predictor calculus throughout the week, you can't deny Oklahoma. They have survived countless disasters and they're still there.
Yeah. What did we say? Like they were one of those teams that I ID'd. Okay. They're living too dangerously. So now they have TCU, which can be a semi-dangerous game. They've got Kansas, which will be laughable. They'll beat Texas Tech. Baylor could be interesting. They've got a couple of games, Paul, if I look at their schedule, Iowa State still lingering. They still have Bedlam. Who knows what Oklahoma State is? They still have a tough road. And if you look at any of these teams with what they have left, Oklahoma's got a pretty tough path. Texas is a good football team. They're probably going to, you know, if things work out their way, get another shot at Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship in December. But the Big 12, I mean, you would have to think SEC, now one team. We don't know about two. Big 10's going to get a team, which, by the way, look out for Ohio State.
Exactly.
So we joke about this all the time. We know just enough not to know anything now.
The Big Ten reminds me a little bit of the final turn at Talladega. You got seven wide, and there's going to be a crash. And I just don't know who's going to be lucky in that. I think Ohio State will be. Give Harbaugh credit. I mean, he continues to amaze. And meanwhile, Scott Frost, I mean, just losing on the last second, it's just become his signature, isn't it?
I felt so bad for him on Saturday night. I mean, the cutaways of him on the side, I legitimately felt bad for Scott Frost.
I mean, I don't know what he did in his former life, but he did not pay enough for it. And now he's getting some sort of bizarre inverted karma. I am too. I think he's impressed me by losing some of these games, but. I'm not a correspondent for the Big Ten Network, so I don't know their schedule by heart. But every week now is going to be fascinating, and I loved watching the Penn State Iowa game. I thought that was okay. The last really great game of the day. I didn't know what was happening for the nightcap.
I got a buddy of mine, huge Iowa fan, and the Big Ten West, by the way, is Iowa and then nothing. It's actually pretty embarrassing. But the Big Ten East has Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. We can keep this audio, and I'll be the first to admit when I'm wrong. I still think Ohio State's the team to beat, and it's not even close because they're starting to look like Ohio State. But you can't convince me Iowa with Spencer Petras. I know Iowa people, you listen to the podcast and we talked about how great the program is, and that's not taking anything away. But Spencer Petras is not going to beat anybody in a big game again if he plays the way that he did. It just wasn't good quarterbacking in a game of that magnitude. Now, Penn State has a good defense, but I guess that's why I'm hung up on Iowa this morning. They're really, really, really good. But is that performance yesterday beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship? I don't think it does.
No, I would ask Iowa fans to take a snapshot of the AP poll today and make posters out of it because I don't think it's going to get any better.
Let's wrap up with this because we've talked about all the amazing games. The noon window was one of the best noon windows we've had in a long time. The 3:30 window was football melatonin because none of those games were good. All you need to know is that Florida State went into Chapel Hill and beat North Carolina.
Oh. When does Mac Brown sit next to you again?
No comment. But that I won't confirm or deny that was a running question yesterday in the studio.
We love the guy, but
we do.
From number 10 in the country to absolute disaster is not going well.
It is not, especially with some of the guys they had coming back, including the quarterback. But on a day full of games, any other week on this podcast, we might be leading with Ole Miss Arkansas. Might be leading with that because it was such a remarkable game in the bounce back game between Ole Miss and Arkansas, both of them coming off embarrassing losses a week ago. 52-51. I hope. This is my hope for Arkansas fans. My hope is that you wake up in Fayetteville whenever you're listening to this and you do not second guess Sam Pittman going for two because it was absolutely the right decision in that spot.
Yeah, I was on a plane and I started to scream and the marshal did put me in handcuffs because I think I saw the same tweet 3,000 times as we landed. Love the call. Hate the play. Yep. Come on. I'm enough of that already.
Well, I mean, you look, but you know what it is. And I agree with them and I know it's stupid, but Paul, you just want you on my 2-point conversions. I want the play to look like it has a chance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like whatever the play they had on. So it didn't, but the thing that's been driving me nuts about 2-point conversions all year, it happened in Alabama, Florida. Sometimes you just look at it, you're like, well, what the hell? That's the best you had.
Well, remember 2 years? Was it 2 years ago when Mac Brown went for two to beat Clemson?
Yes.
And you knew the second, and it seems like that play now is used every single time on a 2-point conversion. And I don't even know what it is, but I know one thing: it doesn't work.
You know when you see it. Now I think that's what people are talking about this morning. Like you just want to be teased with the chance. You just want to say, hey, look, no good. You don't want it to be doomed from the start because that thing was doomed from the start.
It's like you get all the greatest offensive minds in the room. You get Kiffin and Jimbo and Sark and Lincoln Riley, and you say, come up with the most convoluted play that you can think of that won't work, because we just want to use that as our two-point conversion.
Yeah, from inside the five-yard line, come up with the dumbest thing you can come up with just because we've waited all day for a two-point conversion. Well, listen, we waited all year for a Saturday like we got, and had you told me, Paul, that Oklahoma and Texas – and Arkansas, Ole Miss was going to be the best that it got, I still would have been on here this morning saying that was one of the best college football Saturdays we've had in a while. You throw the Alabama carnage in there, and I believe October 9th and 10th will reverberate now for probably the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, I can't think of a game that has as much meaning to the rest of college football as Alabama, Texas A&M, because it gave everybody a chance. And, you know, just to think if we had a 12-team playoff right now, Matt, the possibilities we'd be talking about. This is 1 year. It's still fascinating with four. I will say that. And I want to see expansion, but with a 12-team playoff, nothing that happened yesterday would have really mattered.
Is there anyone we need to apologize to? Did we hurt anybody's feelings today? I think we were pretty honest with what happened. I know Iowa people will probably say, well, what do you mean? I need to see another couple of weeks, because I thought I had an opinion on what we knew. And now after yesterday, it's like, I don't know. I don't know, Paul. All I know is that this is probably going to be the kiss of death heard around the world. It's Georgia and everybody else. How's that?
I think that's pretty accurate. So I'll see you next week after visiting, guess where? The only place you can go right now in the SEC, and that's Athens, Georgia.
Oh, is that where nation's headed? Is that inside information?
I think everyone's going to Georgia this week.
Georgia, Kentucky, that's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, who thought Georgia hosting Kentucky would I mean, game day, nation. I'm sure. I think Fox Noon Kickoff, whatever that show is called, will probably show up there as well.
Well, we look forward to. Let's hope that game. I would love to see Mark Stoops in Kentucky make that a game like we got last night, just for all of our entertainment purposes. As always, thanks again for listening and making sure to rate, review, and follow so you don't miss anything. You can watch Paul weekdays on the Paul Feinbaum Show, 3 to 7 Eastern on the SEC Network, and check out Organized Chaos, an ESPN podcast hosted by former NFL coach Rex Ryan and his former Jets and Ravens linebacker Bart Scott. The duo will be reunited in this weekly podcast with new episodes every Monday that will provide listeners with expert insight and analysis on everything happening around the league, featuring trending stories from on and off the field. That's Organized Chaos. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Paul, enjoyed it. Happy football season. I feel like it just got started yesterday.